Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com, the offices of Rajiv S. Khanna PC. This is a conference call for our community. Merely by attending this call and us by presenting this call do not create any kind of attorney-client relationship. Basically, the call is being given as a community service. Your participation is being recorded. Please note this call is being recorded, so if you don't want your voice to be recorded, you can hang up now. Also, I would suggest very strongly, since the call is being recorded, keep your identities confidential when you talk with me. I will answer the questions that have been posted on our forums already first, and then we'll do any follow-ups on those questions. If there's time remaining, then we can take up any new questions. Okay? With that said, let me get started on the first question. From Atul 2010, actually, hang on one second. Let me just mute the entry and exit chime. Just one second. Atul 2010 says, I'm in the seventh year of my H-1B. I-140 is approved. I have to leave that job, join another company. If my ex-employer is maintaining my I-140, can he file my 485 without joining him? See, Atul, this is a difficult question to answer. The essence of a green card application is that there exists a permanent job which you intend to take up on a permanent basis. Permanent doesn't mean forever. Permanent simply means a job that has no end in sight. By leaving, or by the employer having you leave, there appears to be a very clear indication that there is no permanent job. So while technically a green card job is for a job in the future, if continuing from the present to the future, there is a such a job that they have done the I-140 for, you could very well file the 485 with them. That's not a problem, okay? But USCIS could question whether there does exist a permanent job. I would want you to discuss carefully with your lawyers the options as well as what I have raised as an issue. Now, remember, typically, we are, most lawyers who are well-versed in immigration laws are 2 to 5 years ahead of government in predicting what the government will do. So far, I've never had a problem like this happen, but I suspect somewhere along the line, the government is going to start raising objections like this. Okay? So it can be done, but discuss it with your lawyers because I think there are some issues here that need to be clarified. Raj 345, he is going from a non-CAP exempt, which basically means a quota H-1, to a CAP exempt H-1. His question is, if he comes back to a quota H-1 again, will it be difficult? You know, I don't know, Raj. I don't remember if INS ever spoke to this issue specifically. They may have. My guess is, but please don't take me up on that, confirm that, you know, from whatever sources you have, including your own lawyers. Confirm it. I believe that once you have held an H-1, and it may be in one of the memoranda from Bill Gates, but I don't remember off the top of my head. It is my belief that once you had a quota exempt job, no, I'm sorry, rephrase that. Once you have had a quota job, even if you go to quota exempt job, to come back to a quota job, you should be quota exempt. Fact was, you've had an H-1 before, and you never left USA for more than a year. Therefore, if I just remember the letter of the law off the top of my head, it should exempt you from future H-1 quota. Once again, you go from quota to quota exempt, coming back to quota, you should be exempt from the quota because you held a quota job before the quota exempt job. I hope I'm making myself clear. Next question is, EAD expiring soon. My EAD is expiring soon. Can I expedite? Well, you can try. Our office, I know, has had some luck in expediting cases where there was a good explanation for the delay and some harm would follow from a discontinuity of the EAD, but it's not guaranteed. So, yeah, certainly it doesn't hurt to try. Flower Girl 123, Her sister entered USA on F-1 in January 2006. There was no unauthorized employment issue, but now she's trying to re-enter after having dropped the course by mistake. The consular officer is saying, well, maybe you worked without authorization, but they also told her she does not need a new visa. Well, look, if the officer told her she does not need a new visa, obviously they are not going to stamp the visa. Under those circumstances, I think she has done everything she could to obey the laws. And if they do hassle her at the airport, I don't think that they can keep her out. I don't believe that she could have done anything else. Okay? It's difficult for me to predict how it will play out. My guess is she should be able to come in without any problem. If possible, keep evidence that she's been attending school. Keep evidence with her showing that she's been taking courses, even if they were less than full. Things like her transcripts, payment of her school fees, etc., would be good evidence. So have her keep some of that with her. Ravi, 1980, the type of work that qualifies under post-completion. So Ravi's question is, can I be volunteering? And the answer is yes, you can be. There is no paperwork to be filed by the company. And you should maintain the details of your work because, if I remember correctly, you have to work at least 20 hours each week in order to be considered to be working under OPT. Double-check those times. They are available from the ICE website under Frequently Asked Questions on F1. Double-check the times, but I don't see any problem with it. In fact, I remember reading that you could even, under the same Frequently Asked Questions, that you could even be working for yourself or working on it on a 1099 as an independent contractor, as long as you're working in your own area of study. So if you have a degree in chemistry, you're working as in chemistry. Okay. So I don't see any problem with this. Next question is Arpit Shah. He says, I'm currently working on H-1B visa. I-140 is approved. My uncle can gift $500,000 to invest in USA. Oh, I wish I had an uncle like that. One problem, Arpit, on a serious note, when somebody gifts you money, if I remember correctly, I'm not a tax lawyer, but they have to pay a substantial chunk of money to the federal government for gift tax. So, again, I'm not a tax lawyer or a CPA. I think the amount is 20%. You can Google that number. But typically, if your uncle gives you $500,000, he would have to give $100,000 to the federal government. That will leave you only $400,000. Something like that. So just keep that in mind. If someone from India wants to loan money, can I invest? Yes, you can use loans as long as you can show that wherever the loans came from were legal funds. Does my uncle in India and here need to provide tax returns? Yes, you need to show that the money came from legal sources. And of course, some part of the money can be loans, some part of the money can be a gift. I don't know any law that says you can't do that. As long as you're personally liable to return the money on the loan. In other words, if you make an investment, for example, let's say you buy a business that has a warehouse, okay, and the warehouse is worth $300,000. If you raise money by mortgaging the assets of the business, you can't use that as capital investment. Okay? You understand what I'm saying, right? So the point is you can use any money as long as it is legal and as long as you are personally either liable or it belongs to you. Gift belongs to you. Loans, you're personally liable. You just can't mortgage your business assets, which are supposed to be part of your green card investment. You can't mortgage those assets and then use the mortgage money as capital. Okay? Once I-5226 is filed as an investor, No, your spouse is not authorized to work in the U.S. The way it works is I-526 and I-485 cannot be concurrently filed. You have to wait until the I-526 is approved. Then your spouse and you will file the I-485. That's where she gets her employment authorization. Okay? Next question is from Aman. He was in USA from December 2005 to Jan 2007 on H-1B. And he went back and came back in August 2007 on L-1. Moved to H-1B again. My question is, to calculate my 6 years, are L-1 and H-1 periods counted together? The answer is yes, they are. Your total number of years of H-1 include H-1 and L-1. Okay. But you were gone from Jan 2007 to August 2007, more than 6 months. So you should be able to get that whole year back. Okay. When you're gone for more than a year, more than 6 months, you get the whole year back. If you're gone for more than 1 year, you get all 6 years back. Marriage certificate, I'm a U.S. citizen, married my wife, an Indian national living in New Delhi, sponsoring her on I-130. The marriage certificate is under her married name. That's not a big deal. I don't think that should be a problem. If there is an issue, that can be clarified through her passport and through affidavits is necessary. I don't think it's going to be a problem. And I don't think you're going to have a problem getting your marriage-based visa either. Dan Audacity wants to know about K-1. I want to get my fiancé from Africa. Should I start filing 129F as a K-1 visa immediately? Well, you can't file until you get your naturalization. The day you get sworn in is the day you can file your I-129F. As far as I know, if you file it before then, a few months down the line, USCIS will deny your application, even if you have become a naturalized citizen later on. But, you know, immigration law, Dan, is very complicated. I always like to double-check these things. You can call USCIS customer service. If they give you a different answer, go ahead and send me a mail from the contact us form. I will double-check the law for you or double-check the procedure for you. But I'm pretty sure you cannot file an I-129F until the day you get sworn in as a citizen. Murali V wants to know about re-entry permit. Filing for my parents who are LPRs, what are the expected times for issuance of a re-entry permit after filing currently? A few months. I don't have the dates in front of me. If I remember correctly, 6 to 8 months typically. If they file and get a two-year permit, how will it affect? Oh, by the way, do remember, they first send, if you apply now for a re-entry permit, they will send biometrics appointment where your parents have to go get their biometrics done. That can be a few weeks. And after that, the application is going to take a few months to process. If they file and get a two-year permit, and they can leave after the biometrics. If they file and get a two-year permit, how will it affect their application towards citizenship? Well, citizenship rules are simple. Physical presence in USA of 2.5 years out of the last 5. None of the visits abroad should have been more than 1 year. If they are more than 6 months, less than a year, they have to be explained. Okay? That re-entry permit does not in any way protect citizenship. For that, you have to look at form N-470. If the re-entry permit issue remains unused, they keep coming back, does it affect any future proceedings towards citizenship? No, it does not. And, if they keep coming back every 6 months. But remember one thing, their permanent home must be in the U.S., otherwise naturalization can be refused. I have my citizenship interview next month. What are the typical questions I always most likely to ask with respect to a valid N-470? Typically, from what I have seen, on the N-470, they don't ask any questions. At least the few people that we have dealt with recently on the N-470 approved list, when they went in, they were not questioned much about the N-470. Because that's in many ways, it's a decided issue already. I don't see, at least That has been my experience so far. So what could they potentially ask? They could potentially ask for compliance with the terms of the N-470, whether you were indeed engaged in helping the commerce of the United States abroad and the kind of work you were doing. And if the project is delayed, and you have no choice but to tell the truth. The fact that you were there and you were trying to make a go of the project should itself be considered to be helpful for U.S. commerce. Next question is, Bob Basic says, worked for a company for 7 years, got offer from company B, applied for a GC based on a future job in EB2, ported EB3 to EB2, I-45 got approved. How long do I have to work for the sponsoring employer? I have a fairly long discussion on this. If you go to my blog and you look at the entries there, we have a fairly lengthy discussion on how long an employee is supposed to work for the sponsoring employer. Excuse me. Generally speaking, there is no law on this issue, but there is an expectation, a legal expectation, that the job is being taken on a permanent basis, which doesn't mean forever. It just means that the date you joined, you did not have any intention in the near future to quit. So some people say 6 months, some people say, 12 months. I don't know if there's any magic number here. Let's take a look at that discussion. That should be fairly clear. Raghu, my EAD is expiring on August 4th. Applied for renewal but not received. Do I have to stop working? Yes, you do. You have to stop working once your EAD expires. If you don't have any other way of working, like an H-1 or an L-1, you have to wait till you get your renewed EAD card. Should you take an unpaid vacation? I think you should be off the payroll altogether. Next question is Kabi Kwa. Married with an American citizen last year. 2 charges of theft, a Class B misdemeanor. None of the charges took me to jail. The issue about what are the implications of, first of all, the way immigration laws define a conviction is not the same way as normal people understand conviction. So conviction does not necessarily mean that you have to be convicted by a court. Any degree of admission of guilt could amount to a conviction. On top of that, there are so many different sections of law applicable to each situation. It is very, very difficult for me to predict what the net effect is. But usually, the good news is when you are getting married to a U.S. citizen, chances are that there is somewhere a waiver available, so that even if there is a problem, a waiver can be filed and you should be able to get your green card. My husband is a doctor and he sent the hardship letter and a waiver I-601 and a motion to reopen. Obviously, this is not a simple issue. You should get yourself a lawyer. This is not something that we can discuss over a 15-minute, or 5-minute discussion. Somebody has to look at your convictions, exactly what the statutes that convicted you said, what kind of punishment you were given, what type of exclusion or deportation grounds are applicable to you, and what kind of waivers are available. All those things have to be examined very carefully. Only then a reasonably good opinion can be given. So get yourself a lawyer. I strongly recommend that. In the fifth year of my H-1, this is from Praveen. I'm in my fifth year of H-1. Green card process is nowhere. I had my labor filed to one consulting firm as a future employee in August 2008. Got an audit, still pending. I've been working with my current employer since April 2009. They filed perm in June 2009, but also an audit. I do not know how it's going to be my future in USA. Well, first of all, because you have an application filed in August 2008, you are entitled to your H-1 extensions even though it was through another company, you're entitled to your H-1 extensions after August 2009. Then you have another application filed from your employer in June 2009 to June 2010. So you're already entitled to your H-1 extensions, and they will continue to be extended even after 2011, as long as the green card process is in the works, whether it is through the initial application, through the I-140, or through one of the labor cert or I-140 appeals. Do I suggest to file another labor certification? No, it's become, unfortunately, very sad, but it's become a normal process to get stuck in audit for many, many, if not most, labor certifications for IT professionals at least. And it's easily the life cycle of 2.5 years. And we also see, and this has been my experience as well, that the entire perm area has become so complicated, we never know which labor certification will be denied and for what reason. It's become very, very... See, unfortunately, what happens is the way U.S. laws have started to work is that we find out law or a change in law only through losing a case. We never know exactly what to expect. It's a very dangerous and a very unhealthy way for any civilized country to function, where laws are discovered after being penalized for the laws. You know, but that's the way immigration laws are working, and the government can get away with it, unfortunately, and they do. Okay, so should you be filing a new labor cert? I don't know, sir. I don't know how strong your case is. You want me to take a look at it? Go ahead and make an appointment. I can certainly take a look at it, give you my opinion. But if the cases are strong enough and everything else is in order, I don't see any reason for you to file another labor certification. Snowman, I started working for my company in September 2007 in OPT. Finished MS in December. So the position requires MS degree. Question is, I started working 3 months, so can I require a master's degree? No. I agree with your company lawyers, but the problem is the analysis has to be a little bit deeper than that. They should compare whether the two jobs are same or similar. If the two jobs are dissimilar, the one that you were doing before and after you got your MS degree, they should certainly be able to file an EB-2. Also remember, you are not stuck with the job that you're currently doing. You could always file a green card for a job that you expect to have in 4 years or 5 years, as long as the job is available now to test the U.S. labor market. So if you're working as a, let's say you joined as a program analyst, you are still working as a program analyst, but the future job is, for example, project manager, you could certainly file a green card for the position of a project manager, and if that job requires a master's degree, you can, of course, go for a master's EB-2. And that is what I would advise. Next question, look at GC 2005. Pending 485, my PD is current, there's an RFC, I've changed my lawyers. How do I handle this situation? Keep pounding on USCIS customer services doors. Make sure that your new lawyers, G28, has been put in place and that they will be sending the RFC to you. Also remember, if you are, for example, our client and for whatever reason you decided to change lawyers, if I get an RFE, it is my ethical responsibility to make sure you get that RFE if I have your address with me. If I have your phone number, even if you are not, if we are not your lawyers, we still are obliged to take care of you because you are our ex-client. We can't just kind of throw away your RFE. So your own lawyer, I don't see why they should not be contacting you. You can even contact them and make sure they have your current address and phone numbers. Can you get a duplicate copy of RFE from USCIS? You can certainly try, and your lawyers will probably be more successful in this than you. How many days do you have to reply for RFE? It depends upon the type of RFE. It can be, there's no set limit now. It can be as little as 2 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks. It depends upon what the RFE is for. Usually, how long to update attorney on file after sending the G28 form? That's very difficult to say. Too many variables. I would say go ahead and take an InfoPass appointment as well. No, it doesn't hurt to do that. But going through the customer service is also a good idea. Next question, Juni, should I wait to file for citizenship? I walk, they live in our area. I walk by your office on Wilson Boulevard while going to Safeway grocery store, and I always wanted to knock the door. However, I postponed it until now. Now I am knocking at your door electronically. Oh, you're welcome to come by. It may be a good idea to call ahead and make sure I'm in the office. If I am there, we can certainly have a cup of coffee. Green card approved in December 2004 as a professor in the university, went on sabbatical leave, 11 months absence from USA. Then got extension in leave and went again, 10 months absence. Maintained own home in USA. You see, one very important thing, sir, is this. You should not have taken up a new job outside USA. And if you did, it was a job that was in continuation of your U.S. efforts. If you actually just quit your job here and took a job in India, which is not your case, I don't think you should have a problem. So you could apply for citizenship any time after your 2.5 years of physical presence is complete. And you will have an explanation why you were gone so long. So I don't see any problem. It doesn't appear that you have broken the continuity of your residence. If there is a good explanation for why you were gone that long, and if you can show that your permanent home continued to be USA. If you are on the phone, I'll be happy to discuss this further with you. You know, I would like to know what you were doing overseas. I assumed you were in India, but you may not be. So wherever you were, what were you doing there during that 10-month and 11-month absence? If it was a sabbatical, that means the university did not resign your job. Okay. So it looks like it should not be a problem. Then I have an approved I-140 with the next question is from V. Srinivas. I believe Srinivas, he says, I have an approved I-140 with a priority date of April 2006. The original perm was for a software engineer. I moved into a finance role. Company will not file I-485. Current H-1B expires in March 2011. I'm not sure how I will get an extension. Well, first of all, you can file another green card for the finance role, although it's very difficult to get financial green cards approved at the moment, especially in some areas where there have been a lot of layoffs of financial people, such as New York. But yeah, you can file another green card and the priority date can be ported over. I plan to go outside the country with the same company to return back either on L1A or H1B. Can I port my priority date based upon the approved I-140 to a new perm application once I return? You can do it even now. Why are you waiting to file the perm application till you return? Do it now. How long is my PD valid for? If the I-140 is approved, the priority date under the current system of laws is valid forever. If I come back into the country with a different company, can I still use my old PD? Yes, you can. And even if the application is not related to engineering, you can still use your old PD. Can I be on U.S. payroll if I get an extension to my current H-1 while being outside the country? Here is the problem there. That raises the issue. If you want to do an L-1, you must have been employed abroad for a branch, affiliate, parent, sister, etc. of the company that you're working for in USA. I think the fact that you're getting paid from U.S. funds could be viewed suspiciously by USCIS, whether you were really employed with the company abroad. Okay. But if that is their normal methodology, that's what they do for other people and other executives as well who are not coming on L1, you could certainly make an argument. This is a very tightly fact-bound question. I would have to know a lot more about the two companies to tell you whether it's going to be okay or not. But generally speaking, if you can get paid by the local company, you're better off. If my date becomes current within the next 2 months and I move into a software engineer role and apply for my I-485, how long do I need to be in that role? The answer is the same as I gave to somebody else just a few minutes ago, which was, how long do I have to stay at my job It's the same answer. When you take the job, you should have no intention of quitting in the near future. Then after a few months, if situation presents itself and you want to move on, you can. But when you take the software engineer's job, you should have no intention of quitting in the near future. Vishnu 705, a question regarding EAD and H-1B. PD became current this month, and I hope to have an EAD in 3 months. I'm still on H-1B and want to keep it. However, I would like to start independent consulting work on my EAD. If I use my EAD, does it automatically make my H-1B not valid anymore? No, but it puts you on EAD. And if you want to go back on H-1B, you have to go outside USA and re-enter USA using your H-1B visa and start working for the company whose H-1B you were approved to work for. If you ever in the future start using your EAD again, then you'll be back on authorized period of stay. And again, to activate the H-1, you have to step outside USA and come back again. That pretty much covers the questions that were posted, folks. So let me open the call to those people who have already posted their questions. Just 1 second. If you have already posted a question and you have a follow-up, please go ahead and press star 6 to speak with me.
Hello, Rajiv?
Yes, sir.
Hi, this is Bob Basic for the 485 approved question.
Mm-hmm.
I had a follow-up question, though, in the sense, my 485 got approved, though, but I haven't still received the physical card. So my question is for status, though. What's the status when the 485 is approved and you don't receive the card yet?
One thing you could do is you could just take an InfoPass appointment and go downtown, wherever you are, and they should stamp your passport. Okay? That stamp on the passport is as good as a green card in hand.
Okay,
the stamp will say something like approved for I-551, which is the green card, temporary proof of permanent residency. I think it's good for 1 year.
And if the date goes back unavailable or anything, the PD does, that doesn't affect me anymore.
It doesn't affect you anymore. You are now a guard-like creature who's immune from all these priority date problems.
So even though my EAD expires in a couple of months, renewing that is also fruitless.
Oh, absolutely not. Why should you spend money on it?
Okay, cool. Thank you so much, sir.
Good luck, sir. Star 6, folks, anybody who wants to talk with me, press star 6 on your phone.
Hi, Mr. Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Kaiser, actually. I'm not one of the guys who posted the question.
So. I'm going to ask you to hold just a minute, because if there is nobody else, then I'll be happy to take your questions.
All right, sure.
But people who have posted, I would certainly like to hear from them first.
Okay, sure.
Guys, press star 6 on your phone if you have a follow-up question. Star 6. It doesn't look like, and I know there's a bunch of people on the phone, but I don't see anybody who wants to have a follow-up question. Heather, go ahead, please. Heather?
Yeah, this is Kaiser.
Oh, Kaiser, I'm sorry, I heard Heather. Okay, go ahead.
I had a couple of questions, and this is regarding my H-1 extension.
Sure.
My current H-1 expired in May 2010, and my company, they filed for an extension in April 19, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And currently we have not received any reply from USCIS on the approval. The only thing that we found out was that it has gone for a background check. So now my first question is, is there any way to expedite this process, and what are my options?
Well, other than praying 5 times a day, I don't see any other way of expediting it.
Okay.
I could tell you to go file a lawsuit, but it'd usually be worthless simply because the moment government comes into the court saying national security, courts tend to back off. Okay? The good news is, if your application for H-1 extension has been filed timely, which means before your current H-1 expired, which it has,
right,
you have automatic extension for 240 days to continue
days.
Working. Right?
240 working days or?
No, it's 240 days, approximately 8 months, not working days, but 230 days.
Okay. So I have another follow-up question. I have a my file for my green card application and my under EB3 category,
mm-hmm.
and my chargeability is India, and my priority date is April 2003. And so my question is, like, you know, looking at the current scenario, what are the chances or, you know, expected, you know, for my PD to become current? And
I cannot predict that, Kaiser. I wish I could.
Right.
The
okay,
only,
so my question then is, if I, let's say, if I don't hear a reply from the USCIS till, you know, and my 240-day time limit expires, right?
Well, you are legal to stay as long as this case is pending. You just can't work.
Work. Okay. So.
Okay.
But what if I, you know, I'm eligible for an EAD. So
yeah, get your EAD. Continue working on your EAD. No problem at all.
Can continue working for my
absolutely.
EAD. Okay.
Absolutely. One has nothing to do with the other.
Oh, okay. Actually,
okay.
And, well, I mean, my EAD needs renewal, so again, you know, the same thing, and I have to go back and file for renewal, and hopefully that won't get stuck. You know.
Well, that should not get stuck, although I've heard some rumors every now and then. I do hear them, that people who have had H-1 background problems, they get stuck even in EAD approvals. Government is trying to figure out every way they can to harass people who are seeking immigration to USA. That seems to be the current Obama policy. It's very unfortunate,
yeah.
But even people who have waited years for legal immigration are being harassed. That's what I see happening.
Okay. Just one more question, last question before I leave. Is there any way to recapture the days on H-1 that I spent outside the country?
Absolutely. Absolutely, that's your right.
Since
that's
I already filed for an extension, my current H-1 is expired, and I'm still in the 240 days. So, I mean, do I have to file a new extension? If that's the case, then I'm already, you know, filing after the fact that my H-1 has expired.
No. Don't confuse the two or three issues that you have just raised. They are all separate issues. First of all, you are entitled to every day that you have been outside USA to be tagged on to your H-1 6 years.
Okay.
Now comes the second issue. How do I apply for it? Well, you apply for it the same time when you apply for H-1 extension.
Right.
You can, for example, let's say you've got 2 years of H-1 left and you were outside for 7 months, you can apply for an H-1 extension for 2 years and 7 months. You can never go beyond 3 years for one extension. Okay.
Right.
Now, you could also successively do the extension. First, you get the extension for the time that you have remaining on the 6 years. Then you get an extension for the time you were outside USA. It's a waste of money. But if you haven't done it the first time around, you can do it like that as well. And the third thing you can do is, while the case is still pending, and if the LCA covers the time period, you can try to file an amended H-1, send it in, and see if the government will accept that and give you an H-1 extension for the time that you already asked for, plus the time you've been outside USA. So you can file an amended H-1 while the H-1 is pending. Without paying extra for it, the way we do it is, we basically just send in a request for an amendment on a pending case without paying extra fees. And I don't recall what our success rate is, but I know that we've done it in the past.
Okay. But it doesn't have to do anything with the fact that my current H-1 has already expired and my...
It shouldn't have anything to do with
that 240 days, you know.
Yeah, as long as the LCA still covers that period, you should be able to.
Okay, I see.
Okay?
Okay, all right. Okay.
Good luck to you. Folks, anyone else have any questions?
Thanks a lot, Mr. Raj.
My pleasure. Okay, I will open the entire call. Maybe some people are having trouble. Let me just open it to conversation. All of you can talk. Anybody has any questions?
Okay, yeah. I'm Gaurav. Actually, we started...
yes, Gaurav. What I was telling you was, simply stated, this is the way it works. Since we have time, let me explain to you what the law is. The law is, an H-1 holder, the day he stops working, he becomes out of status. Okay? Now, some people think that, well, I'm getting severance and I'm still in status. That's not true. Having severance by itself does not mean you're still in H-1 status. In your case, let us assume that you stopped working. Whenever you stopped working, that's the date you're out of status. Okay? In the meantime, you have filed a complaint against the employer, pointing out why you are out of status. There's a good reason for it. Now, if you were to apply for an H-1 extension or transfer to another employer, you could provide USCIS copies of the document and an explanation that your old employer stopped paying you. That's why you fell out of status. And USCIS tends to be sympathetic towards these kind of things. Okay? So, here's the danger, though. Typically, when an employer lets you go, when you quit, the employer is required to inform INS. So let's say they inform INS today, 3 months later, when INS revokes the H-1, they'll revoke it effective from the date they receive the request. Okay? So what that will do is you will end up being retroactively unlawfully present in USA. Unlawful presence of 180 days will make you ineligible to come back to USA for 3 years. Unlawful presence of 1 year will make you 10-year barred. So it is a very, very complicated situation. What we do, what I suggest to people is to assume that the day you stopped working, you started unlawful presence, even though that's not strictly true. Okay? So keep that in mind, and within 180 days, if you are able to get your premium processing decision, you'll be fine. Technically, you're deportable. If INS finds you on the street, they can send you back. And if they deport you, you can't come back for 5 years. But as a practical matter, it's not an issue that we worry about that much in circumstances like this. What we worry about is making sure that you don't run afoul of the C-10 bar. Am I clear now?
Yeah, okay. And one more thing. If I go back, will I get the Labor Department, when the investigation starts, Labor Department will get my backup salaries and then send it to India, or I'll get it over here?
If you leave them your address and your contact numbers, I think they should be able to contact you. I'm not sure how they handle it. I don't know if there is a settled policy on these issues, but I have certainly had cases where employees were actually outside the country when they received the payments, etc. I don't recall whether they were through lawyers or whether they were through directly Department of Labor, but talk with the Wage and Hour Division. They should be able to work something out for you. You can also leave them a local address of a friend or something like that.
Okay. And the other thing is, now, like, my visa is expiring in next few days. So, and my next employer, he's saying, the one who is ready to file, he's saying that it'll take him 1 to 2 weeks to file. So, he'll file by 1st August or 2nd August. That's what he's saying. So, can I overstay for 5-6 days, or I should go back?
When did you stop working?
I stopped working. I mean, I've been on bench for a long time, over 5 to 6 months.
Do you remember do you have any idea when did your employer revoke your H-1?
I don't know. He hasn't told me if he has revoked or anything of that sort.
See, the problem is 180 days is what I worry about. So to be safe, I would just say 180 days from the date you stopped working, you should leave US. Within 180 days.
Okay.
Okay.
So, okay,
hello?
To be safe. Okay, fine. So it is more than 180 days now, I think so. Could be.
Well, if it is more than 180 days already, then another week is not going to kill you. But again, you know, I just feel like it's an unnecessary risk that you shouldn't take. Leave as quickly as you can, because really, actually, the time of unlawful presence begins to run from the date the H-1 is revoked.
Okay. So I don't know if my H-1 has been revoked. How will I come to know if it has been revoked?
See, that is another problem. And that's another issue that has been left in the dark by this beautiful government of ours. When the employer revokes the H-1, the employee is never informed. So you could be incurring unlawful presence without even knowing about it.
Okay.
Okay.
I can't do anything about it.
You can certainly call the USCIS customer service, see if they can give you some information.
Okay, fine. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Okay.
Hello, Rajesh.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hello, Rajesh.
Uh-huh.
This is Asan. How are you?
Good, Asan. Go ahead.
Rajesh, I have one question. Will anybody can able to travel to Canada and come back without the stamp on 797?
Yes, it's called automatic visa revalidation. If you Google that, automatic visa revalidation, it should bring you to the State Department page that explains the law to you.
Okay. Like, what happened is, Rajiv, like, last week I went to Canada and I didn't have a, you know, a valid stamp on my passport. I was, you know, planning to travel on 797. So when the immigration officer asked, I have presented the 797, so she told me that you can't even, you know, travel on this document.
I-94, so not the 797, but the I-94.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, 797 I have in the bottom, I have I-94 also attached.
Yeah, so if you did not surrender the I-94 and the I-94 was still valid, I'm assuming you're on H-1 status, right?
Yes, H-1 status, and, you know, after that, she was, you know, talking. I was having the advance parole also, and then I have given the advance parole to her.
No, they should have allowed you to come. I remember vaguely that there were some countries that were exempted from this, or that were excluded from the benefit of an automatic visa revalidation. There were 8 countries, including Pakistan at one point of time, but then they took Pakistan off that list. I don't recall the exact status of AVR right now, but do a Google on this, automatic visa revalidation, and it should tell you that you are entitled to your re-entry on I-94.
Okay. So, like, after that, she was, Rajiv, she was, like, shouting, so I submitted the advance bill.
Oh, I love these officers who shout. Go ahead and file a complaint against her, please. Do you remember her name?
Yeah, I mean, like, she was shouting, like, anything.
No, wait.
Please,
don't take garbage from people. It's because we let these people get away with this nonsense, they continue to do it. Remember, they are public servants. There are authorities sitting on top of them who will visit them with consequences for nonsensical behavior. Please make a complaint against this woman. Do make it, because it's your civic duty towards other people also, not only towards yourself, but other people also. Make a complaint against them. She has no right to shout at anybody.
And she was telling, like, I will deport it right now. I said, like, I just keep quiet because, you know,
well, you
I have
to,
all
you
the all valid
to.
Documents. You know, I have a H-1 valid and I have a advance parole also valid. So she was starting, I have given the advance parole. And then based on the advance parole, she has, you know, issued the I-94. And then she was telling me that, okay, you can travel on this document advance, not this, you know, the
797. You go ahead and file a complaint against her. And let the CBP know exactly what happened. Let us see what they have to say about. Okay.
Okay. So what's like right now, Rajiv? Like my status is on H-1. Or?
Who are you, sir? Hello, who's talking?
Hello. Rajiv, this is Lutania. I had another question. Probably the other person couldn't start talking. So can I take an opportunity to talk about my situation?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. What is going on?
Okay.
I think I lost you. Hello.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Hello, Rajiv. This is Ram. I have
yes,
a quick question.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, like. I changed my address 2 years back, and I couldn't inform USCIS about the address change, and then later realized and did a few months back, and I was acknowledged by USCIS also.
Okay.
My question here is, I just wanted to check with if USCIS had exchanged any kind of communication with me.
You should be okay. Look, if I remember the law, it has to be willful non-compliance. If you did something in error, and then you, as soon as you found out about your error, you corrected it, I don't think you're going to have any problems.
My question was like, you know, I wanted to check if they had any communication. So I checked with customer care center. They said they have no clue what if I had received anything or not.
No,
so,
no. Did you not do it online?
I did it online. I mean, they asked me to send a form, a signed form as well. So I did do change.
Wait. When you sent the form, did you keep some evidence of having sent it? Like if you sent it certified mail or FedEx or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah, as long as you have evidence of that, you're fine.
Sir, my question was like, I'm more interested in like to know if USCIS has any communication with me prior to my date because they have my old address. Is there any way to know that?
Yeah, you can file for something called a Privacy Act request.
Uh-huh.
If you go to USCIS website,
uh-huh,
look under the forms for Freedom
okay.
of Information Act / Privacy Act or FOIA / Privacy Act, you should be able to find it.
Oh, okay, okay.
You can
okay,
file a Privacy Act request which says, give me copies of all my immigration documents. They have to give them to you, including any communications they've sent you. And it's free.
Okay.
You're not required to pay for this.
And there is no any adverse thing like that, right?
No, not at all.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Rajiv, the call was disconnected. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So, like, I was wondering whether my status is on advanced parole or H-1.
If you entered on advanced parole, you are now on advanced parole, not on H-1.
And she told me that, you know, go to the...
Oh, I'm sorry. What am I thinking? I take it back.
Okay.
If you
okay.
come back and are still working for the same employer who did your H-1, you are considered to be on H-1, not on advanced parole. I'm sorry, I take it.
Okay, but she allowed me to enter on advanced parole.
It doesn't matter, you're still on H-1.
Still on it. And she asked me to, you know, file the, you know, EAD actually.
No, she doesn't know law. What you need to do is, if you go to our website and do a search for Cronin, C-R-O-N-I-N, Cronin, you will pull up a memorandum called Cronin Memorandum, which explains the law. It's a 2004 memorandum that clearly
okay.
says, it's still good law, it clearly says even if you enter on advanced parole, you're still on H-1.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Rajiv. Thank you very much for your...
You're
advice.
Welcome. Good luck, sir.
All right.
Yeah, folks, go ahead.
Rajiv, sir, this is Nitin here. I got hi. I had a question about my green card. I got a green card in 2004. Because of some family reasons, we have to move back to India. But I just wanted to kind of maintain my green card as well as eligibility for the citizenship also.
Only way to do that is a combination of I-131 and 470, two different forms. Okay? I think, personally, I would want you to get your citizenship and then go. Because then you're free completely. At least one member of the family, wife, husband, somebody should take citizenship so that if there's a problem with the other's green card, you can reapply and get their green card within a year.
Okay. The 470, actually that may not be an option at this moment because of the circumstances. I may have to go out of the country for more than a year
then
or so.
Then definitely 131 and 470. That's
okay.
what you need to look at.
So 130, the re-entry permit which we already filed for, but we are still waiting for the fingerprinting to be done. But 470,
one of the biggest problems with 470 is it can only be filed with two circumstances. One, if you are doing some of the activities that they have listed on the N-470, including enhancing the trade and commerce of USA. And two, you must not have traveled outside USA in the last 12 months, not even for one day.
Can you repeat that?
Last 12 months before the application, you should not have traveled outside USA, not even for one day.
Oh, okay. So in that case, do we have, like, there are 5-6 conditions they talked about. Now, my current employer has got offices in India.
Yeah, that works. We have done N-470 for very, very small companies, with just 4 or 5 employees.
Okay. But in that case, like, actually, my employer doesn't have very good projects in India, and they have been laying off in India also. So now, in case if I go back to my own employer right now to India, and then switch to another company, in case if they fire me, or if I find a better opportunity, which has got another office,
that's a difficult question for me to answer. I would have to look at the law. About
okay.
what happens if there's a change in circumstances after filing the N-470 and approving it. I don't know. I don't remember the law off the top of my head. Tentatively, not knowing what the exact law is, I would guess that would be a problem.
Oh, okay. And as far as green card is concerned, if I go back to India and take another job, not with the same employer, and the new job, they will be... They will be putting me on the payroll of India, but they will be sending me to U.S. for the U.S. project. So can I work in that fashion to keep my green card active?
My biggest problem, Naveen, is that when somebody leaves USA and takes a job abroad, that becomes a very big factor in USCIS going after their green card, because they have exhibited an intention not to stay in USA by taking up a job abroad. It's a very, very complicated situation. Be very careful with this. You could end up losing your green card.
So it's kind of a risky to...
It's risky to do it, but if you have taken advance parole, I'm sorry, re-entry permit. Remember, a re-entry permit is not a guarantee that your green card is preserved. A re-entry permit is simply an expression of your intention to come back to U.S.
Okay.
If you do something which is contrary to that intention completely, for example, if you take up a permanent job with the, Indian Department of Defense, USCIS could easily say that, well, you took up a permanent job in India. Obviously, you don't want to come back.
Right. But in my case... Mostly my case would be to take up a job with a software company who has got offices in India and the U.S., and they may keep sending me here on the project just to kind of, I want to have my 2 years completed that way, another 2 years to be eligible for citizenship. So
I think it's a dangerous way to go. I think it's a very dangerous way to go. If any way to avoid it, avoid it. No matter what you do, whatever circumstances, whatever arrangement you come up with, you run the risk of being exposed to a green card takeover. Government could take it back, revoke your green card. Okay, now the re-entry permit does protect you to a certain extent for the next couple of years, but don't think of it as a 100% ironclad guarantee.
Okay. With green card, with re-entry permit, there could be some flexibility for taking up the job offshore also, right? On it's a risky again.
I would say yes and no. Yes, to the extent that if the visit is temporary and you intend to come back and you have your ties in USA still, you should be okay. But if you are using a re-entry permit merely to wait for your citizenship, that may not work. And remember, if on re-entry permit you're outside for, the rules are the same, you're outside for more than 1 year, citizenship is gone.
Okay. Right.
If you keep coming back every 6 months, you're okay. If you keep coming back more than 6 months, less than 1 year, you still have to explain the duration that you were gone. Why were you gone? Have you abandoned your intention to stay in USA?
Okay. And the last question would be, would it make a difference if I call you later?
No, I'm not... I hope that that's clear to people that I'm going to still tell you the same thing.
Okay.
I mean, whether you pay me or not, I'm still going to tell you the same thing.
Right.
The quality of our advice should not change by the amount of money we get. It remains the same. Of course, I'll be able to spend some more time with you. But that does not mean that I'm going to tell you anything different. Substantially, what I've told you, that is the law.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the gist of it is like with the re-entry permit, I should be able to go back, at least work there and maybe maintain the green card. As far as if that company is sending me back here, I should be okay at least. I mean, in principle,
that's what you want me to say, but that's not what I can say.
Okay.
The bottom line is, no matter what you do, if you do not have a short date in mind to come back into USA, even if it is a couple of years down the line, it can be considered to be an abandonment of your permanent residence, so there's no question of getting citizenship.
Okay.
Let me move on. Does anybody else have any questions, guys? I have to run. It's almost 3 o'clock, about a minute left, 60 now. So good talking with all of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, sir.
Bye-bye.